Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Sowers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening.
And you're listening.
And you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly Dixie Podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my Hopkins bro, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, we have a full show ahead of us today to help fans get set up for a terrific weekend, a first-round NCAA tournament action that features four games each Saturday and Sunday. So you can just turn your TV on, ESPNU at noon each day, and that's your home for the next 10 hours of action. Dixie, let's get it.
Thought you were going to forget the whip there for a second. You almost did. You caught yourself.
I did. Caught myself.
Caught yourself. Good. Postseason. What's going on with your background,
the
by the way?
Did you put I have an updated Zoom. And it's the
blur feature.
You
put a filter feature. On there, or is that a background?
It's the blur feature.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you can do this. I really nice. Can do this. It's just takes out everything that's, you know.
Right.
I'm in a pretty sterile-looking office. We just moved back in recently. People who are vaxxed have been working in the office, and I have, like, nothing up on the walls because we're moving out of here in a few months to a new home for the community foundation here, and I figure, like, why bother putting a whole lot of stuff up and creating a cool Zoom background.
I thought you were being held hostage for a second.
If I blink twice, Dix, that
blink
means
blink once if everything's okay, blink twice if you're doing this podcast under duress.
Holding up a newspaper with today's date on it just so that everyone can see this. Hey, man, this is exciting. We've been waiting all season for this. Not sure that it would even happen back in February when we first started talking about the 2021 season, but Maverick May Madness is here. It is here. And I'm excited about it. A lot has happened since we last talked. We recorded last Wednesday, I think. We wanted to be able to come out before all those games, semifinal, conference tournament action on Thursday. And how about those Blue Jays? They were able to upset Rutgers, make it to the Big Ten championship game, where they held a 9-6 lead before Maryland showed their class and came back. That's the third, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the third time this season that Hopkins has had at least a 2-goal lead against the Terps before the Terps came back to beat them?
Yes, first meeting in College Park regular season.
7-5 first half, right?
Hopkins was up 7-5. I think Maryland scored too late to make it 7-7 going into halftime, and then Terps took off. We all know what happened at Homewood Field, mm-hmm. Around, 3 weeks to a month ago, around
wasn't even that long ago.
The late lead where really Maryland pulled a rabbit out of their hat. And then this past weekend up at State College, Hopkins was playing great, up 9-6 at one point.
Yeah. Early in the second half, scored that first goal at halftime, 9-6, and then Maryland just shut them down.
Yeah,
Hopkins turned the ball over and over. A lot of unforced errors by the Blue Jays. Just, you can't do that when you're trying to take down, an undefeated team.
Right. And yeah, Hopkins, I thought Maryland did a nice job making some defensive adjustments. They turned Hopkins into a dodging team, which against Rutgers, they were exceptional at it from the midfield, but Maryland is a little bit different defensively than the Scarlet Knights are. So Hopkins was having success with some really good ball movement. I thought they started making some poor decisions. I thought that they were starting to force it. And like you said, you let Maryland, God, think about it. You let Maryland hang around, right? Maryland was the one that had to kind of fight to stay in the game and make plays and that kind of thing. And you let the Terps hang around. Eventually they're going to come back and snap at you. So that's exactly what happened. But, it was a it was a tough season to, you know, say the least, even with the results. I mean, Hopkins still finished 4-9, but I think Blue Jay Nation felt a whole lot better in that, what, you know, 10-day stretch coming in 2-8, but getting two wins over two really good teams in Penn State and then Rutgers, and then taking Maryland pretty much down to the wire again for all intents and purposes. So I think that allayed some of the churn at Homewood Field and, you know, on the Homewood campus with respect to this program.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it smoothed over some hard feelings by some fans and gave us some optimism for the future, for sure. All right, Dex, last weekend was really important. We crowned 8 conference champions who were awarded automatic bids to the NCAA tournament field. And then on Sunday night, 8 other teams awaited their fate to find out not only if they were in the tournament, but who they would play. And it was all decided. The number one seed overall was the North Carolina Tar Heels, who were 11-2. And their arch rival, the Duke Blue Devils, took the number 2 seed. What do you think of the selection show? Any, you know, we'll get into some of the surprises and snubs and seeding stuff, but just the show in general, what are your thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, congratulations to all the teams that made it. Congratulations to the 8 automatic qualifiers. That is an avenue and a recruiting point for the schools, letting recruits know if you come here, you're going to have the opportunity to play for a conference championship and for an opportunity to go to the NCAA tournament every single year. Selection show itself, I love the fact that it featured both the men and the women. I thought that was pretty cool. Normally the women are, you know, via Skype or something. And I thought it was great that they featured both the men's and the women's. I thought the coverage was great. I thought, you know, all the guys did a great job. I thought she and Stanwyck Birch did a great job. So I thought the show was good. I mean, I thought it was really, really good. I have to admit, I had to do something for the Big Ten Network shortly after the brackets were announced. So I got through the interview with Tim Leonard, the chair of the selection committee, and then I had to get on video with the folks in Chicago and record a couple of things. So that's as far as I got. As impressive as the show was itself and the, you know, the guys and Sheehan that ran it, I thought the interview with Leonard left a lot to be desired, mainly on his part. Some of his answers I found to be just silly and irresponsible, really unimpressive, quite frankly. And that's the first time I felt that strongly about a selection. I mean, look, there's been controversy in the past or you know, eyebrows raised, but this year in particular, the seedings and then the explanations, really, I was like, what planet is this guy on? So anyway, I don't want to be too personal and too mean or anything of that nature, but it was really mind-boggling.
Well, let's get into some of that. The Loyola Greyhounds, that was the biggest surprise to me. I was very surprised when I saw them get selected. And looking back on their resume and looking through who the other options are, it obviously makes sense, and they're a well-deserving team. You know, we talked for the last week's podcast, I was telling you, I don't think they can get in with 6 losses. Well, the way that went down, they didn't play the game. So they never had that opportunity to sort of lose it. And we had mentioned that the Army-Loyola game, whoever won that game, we sort of named that a play-in game to the NCAA tournament. And I was just surprised that given the way that the Patriot League championship game was decided as a more or less a forfeit to Lehigh, I just didn't expect to see Loyola called. What was your reaction to that? And I know that with your son going there, that's certainly was something you guys were looking at.
Yeah. I mean, loaded question for sure for me, but I felt like even after Loyola pulled out of the Patriot League championship game that they still had a shot. They still had a shot. Now, I did find it unique that a school that pulled out of the conference final with the possibility that they wouldn't be able to move forward because of the reason that kept them out of the championship, the positive COVID test, would they be able to compete? But I guess it was reported, I believe Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse reported that when all the kids got back to campus, everybody tested negative, with the exception of the young man who had tested positive. So I guess that put them in the play in terms of being capable of competing this coming weekend. But if you break everything down, I think ultimately Army's late season loss to Navy and then Navy's loss to Loyola in the quarters and then Army's loss to Loyola in the semis, I think those were like kind of three damaging things to the resume of Army. Couple that with Loyola's win over Georgetown, I think probably provided a lot of value to the committee, because you could see they put Georgetown at five, which I was very surprised at. You know, and you know, I've been ringing the Hoya bell all year long. I'm a huge Hoyas fan, but I thought them being the five over particularly a Notre Dame team, I thought that was a little bit of a reach. And no disrespect to Georgetown, but still, Loyola, just the way they finished versus the way that Army finished, I understand it's the entire body of work. I guess at the end of the day, one of the criteria, whatever criteria were used, the eye test, it was admitted by Mr. Leonard that was a huge one. I guess at the end of the day, the Loyola win over Georgetown held a little bit more weight than the Army win over Syracuse, potentially. And also, I guess, the way that their conferences ended up. That's my layman's, you know, 1,000-foot view on maybe how that all went down.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It would have been interesting if Hopkins could have held on, would Loyola have been squeezed out?
And I think that's true. I think, yeah, you could say that. Would Loyola have been squeezed out?
They made it sound
Rutgers
like Rutgers
have been squeezed out.
Leonard made it sound like Rutgers was sort of in the tournament. And yeah. I think he said that it came down to three teams for two spots, and it was Syracuse, Army, and Loyola.
Yeah.
So that would have been interesting to see.
I like how all year people were saying that at best the Big Ten was a two-bid league. And then when Rutgers lost, or even before the semifinal, people were like, oh, Rutgers loses. They're in trouble. And then afterwards, people were like, oh, yeah, we all knew that Big Ten was going to get two teams. Really? I didn't get that vibe.
That's the other thing. I know you work for the Big Ten Network and you cover all their games and everything. And we talk about them a lot, but also that, you know, Hopkins is in the Big Ten. But the little respect that the Big Ten received in this whole process and some of the conversations coming out of it is just stunning to me. I mean, you think of Maryland, they're 12-0. And it's not like it's Maryland. They've won champ. They've been to the Final Four how many years in a row? You know, they won the championship just a few years ago. They're always at the top. The Big Ten has been one of the top rated conferences the last few years. Yet two teams that have two losses are the 1 and 2 seed, and they're very good. Either Duke or UNC, I could see them, you know, there's a path for them winning the championship. But just the way the conversation went around the Big Ten, just because teams had losing records, well, they only played each other. I think Brian Brecht, the Rutgers coach, said it really well. You know, there were 30 games in the Big Ten this season. And Maryland won 10 of them in the regular season. And Rutgers won 8. So that's 18 of the 30 possible wins, leaving only 12 for four teams. Of course, the math suggests teams had to have losing records. That's just the way it was going to go. That doesn't mean, you know, tell me Penn State, who had two guys drafted into the PLL, Ohio State had a few guys drafted in the PLL. Like, they're not good teams, that they don't have talent. They're very good college lacrosse teams. And just sort of the conversation around just dismissing the Big Ten because some teams have losing records, it boggles my mind. And I guess people just didn't really watch the games. I think Patrick McEwen, you know, posted something on Inside Lacrosse this week where he said it really well, you know, saying, I'll just read what he said. Throwing off many attempts at traditional analysis of the league has led to a consensus that this is a down year for the Big Ten. While that is possible, I think that view significantly underrates the possibility of the exact opposite, that Maryland going 11-0 is the result of a historically great team led by a historically great player in Jared Bernhardt, and Rutgers is good enough to be right in the middle of the pack of the ACC, and that over the course of the season, and maybe Peter Milliman managed to have Johns Hopkins playing like a team that could compete on the national stage next year. And I agree with a lot of that. And I also think that Penn State and Ohio State are very talented teams. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they play this weekend.
And
that was a lot there. I said a lot of stuff there.
That's okay. But look, I appreciate it because I feel like I've been the one banging the drum all year for the Big Ten, and others have too. But like you said, by and large, I had a neighbor, people that live up the street, great family. Their daughter plays soccer at Lehigh. This was about 3 weeks ago. He was walking his dog and he came, and he's a huge Maryland fan. He came by and he's like, "Oh, you know, I'm enjoying the coverage. You guys are doing a great job." And I think it was I think we were doing a Maryland game that weekend. I can't remember, but we were talking about it. I'm like, "Oh, it's on the Big Ten Network." He goes, "Is Maryland for real?" And I was like, "What do you mean by that?" And they're like, "Well, the ACC is so good. And, you know, Maryland, they're not playing anybody. The Big Ten's no good this year." I'm like, "What are you watching, ESPN? Like, you know, I mean, is that all you're watching, or is that all you're reading? Because that's kind of the narrative, you know, and it's not just the ESPN. It was other folks too. Let me go through a couple of things here. One, take nothing away from Carolina and Duke. They're two fantastic, bona fide championship lacrosse teams.
And the rest of the ACC, they deserve to be in the tournament too. You know, from Syracuse to Notre Dame to Virginia, very, very powerful lacrosse teams, and have had good seasons, or right, if not better than good.
I watch Maryland live a lot with my job. I was only able to watch Carolina and Duke on television, but still very impressive. Do I have a problem with Maryland being the 3 seed out of those 3 teams? Not really, until you look at the potential quarterfinal matchup. If they win and Notre Dame wins, they have to go play Notre Dame at Notre Dame. Just flip that script, all right? Let's say ACC played conference only this year. Big Ten played out of conference. And let's say the Big Ten rang up that 30-1 out of conference record. And let's say North Carolina, let's say Notre Dame is Maryland. Let's say Notre Dame is Maryland. And Carolina and Duke are Maryland and Rutgers. Okay. Terry Foy ran that analysis that if the ACC played conference only, here are the records. Let's say Notre Dame is in the Carolina or the Duke slot because Terry projected them to be 5-5. Let's say they were the 8-2 or the 6-4. Let's say they were the 8-2 of Carolina, right? So let's say Maryland goes 1, Rutgers goes 2, and then you got Notre Dame in there. And let's just say by whatever circumstance. No, you know what? Let's do this. Let's say that Penn State is that third or fourth Big Ten team, and they're at 6. Notre Dame gets the 3 behind Maryland and Rutgers. And then let's say Penn State was the site of the quarterfinal round. Notre Dame goes and wins, and now they have to go play Penn State, you know, or put Maryland at the 6. Like, just flip the whole thing around. How ticked would people be? How they'd be like, "Oh, that's so unfair. That's ridiculous." And you do have a lot of people right now saying Maryland got hosed, Maryland got punked. And I don't disagree. You know, having Notre Dame's a great team. I honestly think you probably could have put Notre Dame at 4 and then maybe Virginia at 6. But again, putting Georgetown above Notre Dame, it just – conspiracy theorists out there will tell you that they've set it up to be an all ACC championship weekend, because that potentially is what we could get now. Okay, so that's the second thing. Third thing, What really bothered me about the comments made by the selection chair was the language that he used. If he would have just said Carolina and Duke had more impressive bodies of work, more impressive resume, better whatever, okay. I think his words were, North Carolina and Duke went out and played some really good competition and really, really did well, or were tremendous. He kept using that word, tremendous. It gave you the feeling that the Big Ten sat around and said, hey, guys, we're afraid of the outside world. Let's just play in conference. The conference wouldn't let them play. So it gave the impression that, to me at least, and maybe I'm hypersensitive to it, but it gave me the impression that he was implying that Carolina and Duke went out and scheduled all these teams and Maryland didn't. Maryland didn't have the opportunity to. So those are three things that when I think about the bracket, when I think about the seeding, when I think about everything that went down, those are three things that, you know, high level stick out.
Good thought, Sticks. Let's move on to two other things that are NCAA tournament related and have to do with COVID-19. And protocols, I think. The first is the roster size question that was sort of, it caught the coaches by surprise. We talked to John Torpy a little bit later in this podcast. We interviewed him, and he mentions that the coaches' conference call was a surprise, and it's really hurting the team, especially a lot of the teams have bigger rosters this year because of guys that came back or they're handling a larger roster pool. And it's just guys who've made so many sacrifices and, it's just a bad break that they're going to be excluded from traveling to team or being on the sideline for game day.
I couldn't agree more. So there's a couple things to this. One, when I was in college, you could only suit up and have a certain number of guys on your sideline. And it was 93. We made it was only for championship weekend, though. It was only for Final Four. And I was hurt. I'd hurt my shoulder late in the season. So I was like 50-50, you know, if I could play. I was cleared or whatever. And I wasn't going to play that much, if at all, anyway, you know. And I remember Coach Seaman had to come to like 10 of us and say, you know, you guys can't be on the sideline. And they're like, you know, Dix, and it was me and two other guys were hurt. We were, you know, for all intents and purposes, out, and then other guys were held. Like, it was devastating. I mean, it really, you know, and that wasn't anything near what these kids have been through. So it's really a slap in the face. The NCAA, man, like if they were a government, they would have been overthrown by now. Did you see what happened? I think it was a regional women's golf championship. Did you see what happened recently? Wherever this was being held, and I don't know if I have the gender or the stage of the golf chair. I just know it involves NCAA golf. And I believe it was down south. And I saw something early this morning on Twitter to where the director of the championship came out and basically said, the course is playable, but it's not championship level playable. So therefore it's canceled. And these people are like, what? What are you talking? And then the guy just like hightailed it right back up the steps into the clubhouse. So the NCAA just, you know, and then you got the blanket extra year of eligibility last year, which is proving to be a little bit of a headache. I just can't believe that, you know, it's a tough situation. Now, flip side, a lot of these roster sizes have become way too inflated. Is this a way for folks to look at and by attrition maybe have smaller roster sizes, maybe examine how many players they actually have, that kind of thing? I don't know. It's still, those are two separate conversations. It still does not justify what the NCAA did with the kids who are here in 2021 that have worked hard, that have put in the time, put in the effort, made the sacrifices, not only to keep themselves healthy, but to keep their teammates healthy, to keep their coaches healthy, to keep their support staff healthy. It's a real big slap in the face.
One other oddity about the schedule this weekend is that there are four host sites, and instead of having double headers, which is traditional, play two games in one venue, maybe a 12 and 2:30 start or the evening session, different days. So, for instance, North Carolina will play at home at Chapel Hill at noon on Saturday, and then the other game at Chapel Hill is on Sunday. So each location has a Saturday, Sunday, which is very unusual. I think that must be COVID related. Maybe they feel like they can get more people there, or those fan bases can get as many people as they want there, or clean the stadium out. But it makes it a lot harder on the host schools, both financially and personnel wise.
I can't speak to that. I'm not in the know with regard to the execution as you just described it. I can tell you that the predetermined sites for the first round are not unique, or it's not the first time ever. I remember in the late 90s, there were predetermined first round sites. I remember doing radio. I want to say it was like 97, 98-ish. I remember being down at the Naval Academy doing first round games that were in predetermined sites. And it didn't stick, obviously, because then the host schools were the ones hosting it. So, I don't have an answer to why things are broken up that way. But, you said something earlier in the podcast that we all have to keep into perspective, especially as we, pick apart all the negatives or, all of our perceived problems with the tournament, the selection, et cetera. I said it when I was covering the Big Ten women's tournament. I said it again when I was covering the Big Ten men's tournament, just to be able to watch these guys and women play, to be with their teammates, to compete, to have this NCAA tournament, to have everything we've had is just really, really special. It's really, really cool, especially when you take into consideration what went down last year, all the cancellations. So at the end of the day, even though we're belly, we got a lot to say, because that's, it's what people want to hear, our opinions. It's still like a really, really cool thing that these kids get to play, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the execution, no matter what. And I think that's, Dan, to what you were saying a few minutes ago, that's what makes the NCAA mandate of only a certain number of kids can travel or dress or do whatever or partake is so hurtful.
Well, this is a special time of year, so let's start talking about the games. As I mentioned, all of these games will be available for you to watch on ESPNU. The first game of the weekend features the number one seeded North Carolina Tar Heels. They're 11-2, and they will take on the champions of the MAC conference, Monmouth, who finished this regular season in the playoffs 8-2.
Yeah, hats off to the Hawks in getting to the NCAA tournament. Upset, really. They had to win three games against Siena, St. Bonaventure, and then the number one seed Manhattan in the championship game. Brian Fisher, they've been here before. They've been in the NCAA tournament. They're going back again this year. And staring them in the face is the number one seed and potentially the most electric team in the NCAA tournament in men's Division I college lacrosse in 2021, the North Carolina Tar Heels. So tall order for Monmouth. The MAC has never won an NCAA playoff game, I want to say, and I've covered quite a few. I remember when Brian Brecht was at Siena in particular, I remember several Siena-Syracuse games. I had the Detroit Mercy-Notre Dame game at Arlotta a few years ago with Matt Ward when Detroit was winning for three quarters. And they were doing the mosh pit. They were playing the air guitar. They were doing all kinds of celebrating. I did Canisius against Loyola in 2012. So look at me. I've got a lot of action under my belt when it comes to the NCAA tournament.
A lot of action.
This is a real tall task for Monmouth against Carolina.
Yeah, for sure. Second game of the day is one that I think a lot of fans are looking forward to. Number 8 seeded Lehigh finished the season 10-1, earned the Patriot League championship, as we talked about, in an unusual fashion. We'll take on Rutgers, 8-3, second place team in the Big Ten all season. That game is at 2:30, and they'll play in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yeah, I'm excited for this game. Lehigh was rolling all year long and then just ran into a buzzsaw up on the main line a couple weeks ago. Villanova beat them 16-8, but then they were able to rebound, beat Colgate 13-9 in the semis of the Patriot League tournament. We're poised to host Loyola before it was canceled. So And then Rutgers, you know, the tough loss to Hopkins in the semifinal that had them sweating a little bit for an NCAA tournament bid. But I'm so happy. I'm really, really happy for Brian Brecht and his crew to be in the NCAA tournament, for the nation to be able to get another look at Adam Shirlambidis, Kieran Mullins, you know, the Curse brothers. What a story. Now they, you know, you've got Connor and Colin playing against their brother, you know, a member of the Lehigh Mountain Hawks.
Colin's old school.
Yes. Yes. Colin's old school. So this is really a, it's going to be a special day for the Curse family as the brothers reunite. And I think, you know, there is a lot of media out there this week detailing the Curse family, you know, why Colin and Connor went to Rutgers, you know, Cole being at Lehigh, making, you know, really, really good player at Lehigh. So that, you know, take all that. That's a great side story. On the field, Rutgers really struggled against Hopkins at the faceoff, and now they're facing the number one guy in the nation in Mike Sisselberger. They also have Connor Gaffney, a pretty darn good number two as well. So right off the bat, that's a monumental task for the Scarlet Knights. Can they get stops? Can they make saves? And can hopefully they got to play better defense, especially at the shorties. I mean, Hopkins feasted on their short stick D-middies. They can't rely on Colin Curse, that is, to continually bail them out. But if they get the ball, which they will, and if they can run their offense, you know, Lehigh's a terrific D, you know, led by Anthony Tangredi. And then you have James Spence between the pipes. This is going to be a really, really good game. I'm excited for this game. And it's one of the, you know, I know we talked earlier and you asked me, like, what are the 1, 2, 3 games I'm looking forward to the most? This is one of them.
Yeah, this will certainly be one of the most anticipated games of the weekend, and it should be a great one. The next game up on Saturday is one that I'm really looking forward to, Dix. This will take place out in Denver, Colorado. The number 6 seeded Notre Dame Fighting Irish finished the regular season 7-3. We'll take on the champions of the Colonial Athletic Association, the Drexel Dragons. Our old friend Brian Volker, the head coach there, named Coach of the Year in the CAA, and his Dragons are 10-2.
Well, whereas John Tillman, if he is displeased with the Maryland's number 3 seed, he's kept it to himself, whereas Kevin Corrigan has let it be known that he feels like Notre Dame has been slighted, has been disrespected. So that is a team that is angry. And they'll be going to Denver to face a Drexel team that's won, what, 8, 9 in a row? Maybe the hottest team in the country are the Drexel Dragons. Handled their business this past weekend, the Colonial Athletic Association tournament, where Delaware was the number 1 seed, even with the recent success of Drexel, and they get knocked off in the semifinals by Hofstra. And so at Hofstra, where the tournament was played, Drexel's able to go on there, and they were dominant in that game. I mean, they got out to a huge lead. They just, you know, were ready to play right when they stepped off the bus. Must have gone to Vincent's Clam Bar, maybe. Volks took took a suggestion. But regardless, you know, Drexel's playing at a really, really high level. A lot of people feel like Notre Dame's a team that not only can get the championship weekend, but win the national title. So I'm with you, man. This is another one that I'm really looking forward to.
Last game of the day on Saturday, number 5 seeded Georgetown, 12-2 on the season, champions of the Big East Conference, take on Syracuse Orange. We're 7-5. The game's at 7:30, and they'll play it in College Park, Maryland.
Well, look, you know, hats off to Kevin Warren and his crew winning their third straight
repeat
Big East championship. Unbelievable. And then what's even more impressive, or not impressive, but mind-boggling, Denver has not won that conference since 2015, the year they won their national championship. So it's been a mixture of Marquette and Georgetown taking the Big East Conference championship. But this Georgetown team is for real. They're very talented, terrific goaltending, defense is stout. The midfielders have really picked it up. I mean, how about Dylan Hess this past weekend? Scores that timeout where Kevin Warren called I'm sorry, scores that goal where Kevin Warren called timeout and then comes back and scores anyway and just says, Coach, don't worry, I got you. Just a great culture at Georgetown. Playing a Syracuse team that a lot of folks, myself included, didn't think were tournament worthy. Got the nice win against Robert Morris last weekend to kind of, you know, give him a little bit more mojo coming into the NCAAs. I'll say this, though. I've always had respect for the Syracuse program. I have even more for the players after the way they handled the Chase Scanlon situation, the way they acknowledged the Yardley Love, the One Love Foundation, the anniversary of Yardley Love's death last week. You know, those kids, they're good men, you know, for standing up for what they believed in and for ultimately, you know, you read all the reports, really the right thing. No question asked. So at the end of the day, D-Fly, what we got, Patrick Ewing against Ronnie Cycli, and we know how those games went back in the day. So I think Georgetown is going to handle their business.
Syracuse is going to need Pearl Washington and Derek Coleman.
Shoot, they might need to call out Mello, you know, to come back and play. But yeah, I have to go back and look at the record books. It might not be the last time they played in the NCAAs, but the most memorable time Georgetown and Syracuse played in the NCAAs was 99 in College Park when Georgetown made their first and only national semifinal appearance and Syracuse handled them that day. I think the Hoyas are poised to move on to the quarters.
Moving on to Sunday's slate of games, Dixie, it starts the number 4 seeded Virginia Cavaliers finished the regular season 10-4. They will host Bryant Bulldogs, who finished 9-3 and are the champions of the NEC.
Yeah, congratulations to Bryant, Mike Pressler back in the NCAA tournament. And a lot of folks had picked St. Joe's to win the NEC because the Hawks had been the best team in that conference for a good portion of the season. But Bryant, they always find a way to kind of put it together and get into the NCAAs. And, you know, Coach Pressler taking on a familiar foe in Virginia from back in his days of coaching the Duke Blue Devils. And, you know, Virginia, all the talent in the world, just at times don't play as a team. At times seem to be lacking some chemistry. But what could be better than hosting a first-round game at your place? And Klockner is one of the best places in college across to watch a game. So I think this one will be competitive for sure. But, you know, obviously Virginia is favored in this one.
Keep an eye on Bryant. 7 of their top 10 scorers are freshmen.
Wow.
Including 4 of their top 5. So it's young team. They've got a young team and a lot of the future looks bright for Bryant. Back in College Park, number 3 seeded Terps, 12-0 on the season, champions of the Big Ten Conference, will play Vermont Catamounts, who are 9-4 and the winners of the America East.
So congratulations to both Maryland and Vermont. Both won their conference tournaments this past weekend. I think one thing people aren't talking a whole lot about is Chris Fipes. Chris Fipes, the head coach of the Catamounts, is a Maryland graduate. Yes. Graduated in 2007. He played for Dave Cottle during his time in College Park. So, you know, this is a guy that's intimately familiar with the Terrapin program. Also, Jake Bernhardt, offensive coordinator for Vermont. His brother, Jesse, defensive coordinator for Maryland. And his younger brother, Jared, just happens to be Maryland's best player, maybe the best player in the country. So a little bit of a Bernhardt reunion in College Park this weekend. America East, great. What a great conference this year. How entertaining was it? Albany beating UMBC in the semifinals, Vermont beating Stony Brook, high scoring games. And then Vermont just really put together a really great effort this past weekend and knocking off Albany to win the automatic qualifier, get to the NCAA tournament for the first time ever. And, you know, they face a Maryland team that is, they're loaded. You know, absolutely loaded. And what's their state of mind after being slipped to the number 3 seed and then potentially having to go to Notre Dame next week? You know, you could have some angry snappers snapper turtles down in College Park. So Studo is probably not happy. So, you know, Maryland, if they play their game, they should move on, but they're going to have their hands full with Vermont.
Yeah, I think Vermont's an underrated team. I think that they've had a really nice season. They've had some issues with COVID, but they've put it together late and have won four in a row. And as you mentioned, it's their first time. Congrats. It's really cool.
And this is where you – so back after they lost to Binghamton on April 24th, coming off of that COVID pause, you're like, all right, you lose to Binghamton. You guys are done, kind of thing. And I think so oftentimes we're so knee-jerk reaction to have a hot take on a team. But then they go and, you know, they beat Albany, they beat Stony Brook, then they beat Stony Brook again, then they beat Albany again. You know, nice job. Nice job by Vermont.
Yeah, good season. We'll see how they fare against Maryland. You know, we talked about the Bernhardt and Feist Love Fest. I think that ends when those teams will roll out the first face-off. They'll get after it for sure. Before we talk about the next game of the day, which is Duke and High Point, I'd like to bring in our guest this week. Let's get to that interview now. Our guest this week is head coach of the Southern Conference champions, John Torpy of High Point, who lead the 8-5 Panthers, winners of six straight games, in a first-round NCAA game against number 2 seed Duke on Sunday at 5 p.m. in Chapel Hill. Coach Torpy, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coach, it's great to have you, and what a long road it's been. You're in the first round of the NCAA tournament, winners of the SoCon, and you won the tournament this past weekend, but it didn't come easy. And the question that we ask all of our guests is COVID in High Point, North Carolina. What's the journey been like? What's the process been like? And how would you best describe the situation, how your Panthers have dealt with it?
I mean, our guys have handled it like champs. I mean, like everybody, I think we had some touch and go there through the fall, and, you know, had some situations where we had a couple guys get it. And then throughout the course of the season, I mean, even going into January, we weren't even sure if we were going to be playing games. We were still trying to figure out our SoCon schedule, still trying to figure out our national schedule at a conference. And just so blessed and so fortunate the fact that we even got a chance to play this year, and just to be where we are right now. And man, it is such a gift just being here with the seniors and having another opportunity again to practice with them and be around them. And the cool thing about this part of the year too is just, you know, the amount of time that you have. I mean, our guys finished finals last week during the SoCon tournament. And now, you know, we have basically nothing but lacrosse. So just got done with a film session with our guys, had some lunch with them, took them bowling the other day. You know, we've got just time to hang out outside of lacrosse. And it's been a lot of fun, honestly.
Yeah, that is a great part of this time of year. You can become, quote unquote, just a lacrosse player, you know, because the academics are finished, the exams are done. One of the things that set you guys apart in 2021 uniquely was you guys were always like a standby team, if you will. You know, like if there was a cancellation or a movement or a postponement, High Point was a team that you could turn to get a game with, and you had that situation against the University of North Carolina earlier this season. How'd that process play out, and what's the mindset in being available and then being called to action in short order?
Yeah, well, we had Bellarmine had some issues with COVID, and Bellarmine and us in North Carolina were scheduled to play Bellarmine that week, and knowing that, you know, Bresch, who I was fortunate enough to play for at Ohio State, and we've got a great relationship. I knew he was looking for a game. We were looking for a game. We're 45 minutes away. And I just called him. We just started to get the wheels in motion. And just to even get a game this year and to turn it around, there were so many people that had to be involved, from, you know, people to administer the tests, from trainers to, you know, doctors in that case, to be able to get us a new set of tests, because the tests that we had originally taken for the Carolina game, unfortunately, were shipped to Memphis, that were going to go to Florida, and there was a polar vortex, so they never left the ground in Memphis. So, you know, we were calling on a doctor of one of the kids on our team's fathers to get some last minute PCR tests, because we couldn't do the antigen test for the ACC. I mean, it was just wild, just like such a wild journey. And just in that case alone, it was just so, we're fortunate to have both Duke and Carolina so close that it was a simple phone call. We talked it out. We hashed it out. We got it worked out. And at the 11th hour, I think we found out the bus was leaving at 11 a.m. because it was a 3 o'clock game. We found out, I think, at 10:50 that all of our guys had tested negative. We got on the bus. We played. And the rest is history. So just a wild, wild journey. And it felt like every week was like that when you're finding out on Thursday if your guys test, you know, if all your guys tested negative, you're going to have a game. And I mean, you saw how many games were canceled this year because of, you know, some unfortunate situations. But I mean, just the stories that we all have from this year, we'll have those for a lifetime.
Coach, you talked about the how valuable it is and what a blessing it is to have some extra time with your team, especially the senior class. This class seems like a special group for High Point and your program. Can you talk about their collective contributions to High Point lacrosse and what this group has meant?
Yeah, I think, you know, having a hand in every single guy that's ever played here, we've never compromised our morals to bring someone in here that was going to, you know, set our culture or pull us in a negative direction. And this class of guys, they were tasked with a lot early, just in terms of them playing early. Some of the guys were forced into leadership roles early. And this team was freshmen a year after we probably had our worst year to date. You know, we had lost our faceoff guy. We were, you know, reeling a little bit. And we knew that this class had to be really good in order to get our program back to where it needed to be. And I look at the journey these guys have taken. I mean, they started off 0-6 with, just like we always play, a gauntlet of a schedule early. And they turned that 0-6 season in 2018, their freshman years, into a regular season conference championship. You know, we have the great year in 2019. You know, we beat the two ACC teams and were, you know, I think, ranked as high as like 8th in the country at one point. And then obviously everybody knows what happened last year. But this group is just resilient. They're unbelievably high character. I mean, every one of these guys is basically has a job right now outside of the guys that want to come back. And I think about this team a lot. I mean, I think about these guys a lot, you know, when I'm just hanging out with my wife or, you know, I'm around my kids and I'm like, man, this is a group of guys that I would literally, you know, do anything to have my kids become when they get older, because they're just such good people. They work hard. They do the right things on and off the field. And even in a year where our freshmen and the rest of the team was kind of separated, you know, for the majority of the season, not being able to see each other as much with, you know, all the COVID rules in place, they did such a fantastic job of just, you know, in the moments where they could, giving their leadership and, you know, giving their guidance to a group of guys that just, they needed it this year. So I owe this group of seniors a lot. And like I said, just to be able to be with them for another week and to be able to be around them, you know, both on and off the field, it makes me sad when they leave, when they're going to leave. And it makes me excited that I even get this opportunity with them.
One of the things that sets High Point apart, in addition to being a really good lacrosse team, is your guys' presence on social media. And some of the things that you guys crank out are so creative and so funny. The one that will always stick with me was the video of you making it from the parking lot up to ultimately what is the film room at High Point last summer to kind of lampoon what was going to happen on the summer recruiting circuit. And I'm living it. You know, I've got two high school boys, so I really even maybe more appreciated, you know, what goes into it. What's the impetus of those videos? What's the driving force? And how much fun is it to have that kind of presence in those channels?
It's awesome. And I am not a social media guy by nature. I always laugh like when people put like the Twitter account next to the coach's name, I don't have one. So I rely pretty much everything on High Point's Twitter account. And most of the time it's our staff just sitting around, you know, having funny conversations and that stuff bleeding over to actually coming out. And we always said, like, you know, you look at a lot of teams' Twitter accounts in different sports and a lot of the stuff is just serious or it's fairly vanilla. And I always said, like, let's add like an element of like, you know, comedic relief to what we're doing, because this is a game, man, and this should be fun. And so there's times where some of the stuff we put out there might be a little bit more off the wall, but it's gotten to the point where, like you said, Mark, I mean, people will say to us all the time, like, man, I love your social media. It's great. Funny. It's got some life to it. And when you put that kind of content out, it makes you constantly think about you know, doing something that's even more over the top, you know. So we're always bouncing ideas, and sometimes we have to say, I don't think that's going to work out. And sometimes we say, yeah, let's do it. And sometimes it's a total flop. Like the one time I tried to make a graphic, it was like a print shop graphic of like a pumpkin with like, you know, triangles for eyes and a triangle for a mouth. And like, yeah. Yeah. Let's put that out. That'll be great. And it got like 20 likes, you know? So we almost have like a competition within the staff of whose stuff's going to fly the best, but usually Coach Tuma, Coach C-Mac, Coach Kenny, and Coach Bryce win with Kevin McMahon. My stuff just usually hits the cutting room floor and nobody speaks.
It's brilliant. If anybody, any of our listeners have not seen, it was from what, around springtime, late spring last year, the recruiting setup for Coach Torpy and his staff. So check that out on Twitter. That'll be well worth your time.
Appreciate that. Right for it though.
Coach, you've won six straight games, and you know, you played some great competition early, obviously. But even in your conference schedule, it seems like something started to click for your team around the middle of the season. Can you talk a little bit about that and what the difference has been?
Yeah, I think for us in the early part of the season, we always say we're like a work in progress team, both from a scheme perspective and from a personnel perspective. So we're still trying to figure ourselves out. And when you play, you know, Duke and Carolina twice and UVA and Robert Morris and some great just at a conference competition, I mean, those programs completely and utterly magnify your deficiencies and they allow you to see your strengths. You know, so for us, we really use those games. Of course, we want to win them. You know, we want to put our best foot forward. But just the film from those games. I mean, we played Carolina three times by the end of February. So we were learning a lot about our team and what we needed to do and what we couldn't do if we wanted to be playing, you know, at this point late in the season. And you look at the SoCon, and the SoCon has done a tremendous job over the last couple of years as a conference of, you know, beating ACC schools and competing against great programs and getting wins against high profile programs. So in order for us to be the best we need to be in conference, we need to be able to test our mettle at a conference. And so as the season progressed and we got into, you know, VMI and Richmond and SoCon play, we had worked on a lot of the deficiencies that we had had individually and team wise, you know, what was working for us, what wasn't. And we really like changed our style, you know, and I had this conversation, you know, a couple of days ago, but we were very aggressive in our offense when we had Timmy Trautner in the cage. We had a guy in there that, you know, could steal five or six, you know, shots a game. And we were giving up some on the doorstep that maybe we were, you know, not scoring in transition at the rate we wanted to, but we were giving up some on the other end. And we continued to play that way up until really the Richmond loss this year. We tried to play that way through Richmond. And I mean, Dan Schimatti, the staff, do such a good job of just making the game kind of their taking the game under their control. And I said, you know, if we want to have a chance to beat these guys and beat some of the better teams in our conference, we need to be a little bit more, you know, I would say possession oriented and be able to take the ball to the deeper end of the clock later in the game so that our defense isn't just, you know, reeling all the time. And so we did that. And the byproduct of that was, you know, winning games, winning a couple games deeper in the fourth quarter, winning a couple games of possessions deeper in the shot clock, and just the maturation of our team in terms of the decision they're making, making simple plays, you know, not going for home run plays. All those things have given us a chance to have our defense be a little bit rested in the fourth quarter, be a better version of ourselves in the riding game, in the clearing game. And it was a monumental change, and it wasn't easy amongst the staff. We had some serious conversations, and I'm just glad that, you know, the results of that, you know, ended up being the way they were.
You have one of the best players, not only in the SoCon, but in the country, in Asher Nolting, and at an attack position that is so deep. You know, you tick off the names of Bernhardt, Sowers, Gray, Kavanaugh. It's just a lot of really, really, really good players sometimes don't get talked about enough. And in our opinion, Asher Nolting is one of those things. How would you best characterize his game?
Man, he can do everything, and he can dodge, he can feed, he can score. He's unbelievably selfless in terms of who's scoring and what they're doing. And I've said this about Asher since the first time I saw him. You know, we fell in love with his size, his athletic ability, his vision, just the way he like reacted when other teammates on his high school team and club team scored. But the first thing I fell in love with when I saw him play, and it was at a first time I saw him live was at a camp over at North Carolina. was just how hard he rides. I mean, he rides so insanely hard to the point where you almost have to tell him, like, hey, calm down, man. You know, like, we have to put in a rule that the midfield line, you know, starts 3 or 4 yards, you know, closer than where it is on our offensive end of the field, because those guys get to that midfield line so hard. And he's just an amazing person. And people have said, like, can you make comparisons to him? And I always said, like, he reminds me of the way Magic Johnson used to play basketball. He reminds me of that. Like, he reminds me of a guy that can get it himself. He reminds me of a guy that can get every single one of his teammates involved. And, like, he's always got this, like, excitement level to him. And he is insanely cerebral. I mean, everything we tell him, it doesn't have to be on a whiteboard. He doesn't have to walk through it. I mean, he is the biggest sports brain, like, you'll ever meet in your life. You can walk up to him and auditorily just be like, hey, Asher, we need you to do this next time you have the ball. And it could be a move that he's never done before, and he'll do it. And on the flip side, you could say to him, like, hey, Asher, who scored, you know, 14 points and had 17 assists in the NBA Eastern Finals in 2009, and he'll give you the name of the person. I mean, he is, like, it's borderline, like, remarkable, like, what he can do. I mean, we'll run plays from, like, 5 years ago, and he'll, or 4 years ago, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And we might have run it, like, twice. I mean, it's just, that guy lead our offense.
He's been good for so long, and I think fans, lacrosse fans, really know who Asher Nolting is and associate High Point with him. But two other players, our newcomers to High Point this year, have really emerged as top scorers and were recognized by the SoCon as all-conference players. Kevin Rogers, a grad student transfer from Lynchburg, and Braden Maiea, who's a freshman who's just been fantastic. Talk about the three of them working together and that your offensive unit.
Yeah, I mean, we've always tried to build our offense around a lefty Canadian finisher, have a great quarterback at X, and then find those, like, downhill dodgers that can be, like, first contact and first dodge options in the midfield that have a little bit of range in their shooting. And I feel like this year, you know, we've got some really good kind of high-end, like, All-American caliber players in those three. And then you've got guys like Sean Coughlin inside. You got guys like Jack Van Overbeek, who's been fantastic as a freshman. Dalton Solver, Hunter Vines, Mike Ippolito. I mean, there's a group of guys there that are just playing so well and so complimentary of one another. But to talk about Kevin, he's electric. I mean, he is electric. I mean, from the second he walked into our locker room, our guys were like, this kid is awesome. I mean, this kid has got everything and anything we needed on this team as a leader, as a worker. He can score from range. He can score underneath. He can beat his guy off the dodge. He can feed. I mean, he can do multiple things with the ball on his stick. And I've talked to a bunch of, like, PLL guys. I'm like, man, you've got to take a chance on this guy. I mean, he's got such a quick release, and his ability to score is in such multiple ways. And then with Braden, I mean, you know, I've got a great contact up in Canada. I won't share who it is, because then every coach in the country will be calling. But he said, I've got a guy up here, and I had seen him play at an event up in Canada a few years back that was box. There was no other American coaches up there and no other college coaches up there. And he said, and I said, what's the deal with this guy? And he goes, man, he will get the ball in the deepest, darkest corner of the arena and come out with it, and he'll score and he'll cut and he'll never stop moving. And he's a lot like we had a guy here a couple of years ago, Dan Lomas. He just never stops moving. He can shoot from multiple angles. He can finish inside. He can finish outside. And we've always kind of looked for guys like that, whether it was Dan Lomas or Connor Robinson. Chris Young for us a couple of years ago led the NCAA in shooting percentage. But we've built our offense around a Canadian guy inside that would give the guys on the perimeter a little bit more space to dodge into. And then if you were to leave off of those guys, you know, we needed those guys to be like, you know, 45, 50, you know, plus 50% shooters inside to be able to, you know, make people pay for that. And Braden's been just an incredible example of that.
You guys have always been able to fill up the score sheet, you know, offensively. Defensively, though, you guys have made tremendous strides in 2021 heading into the NCAA tournament. How would you best describe your defense, its evolution, its maturation this season?
The simplicity of it is kind of a conversation we had before the Richmond game in the SoCon championship. We said by the offense playing a little bit more deliberate and taking the ball to the deeper part of the clock and not putting our defense on our heels so much, we've given the defense like a yard, you know, in terms of their ability to play the ball. And so where we might have been a little bit more tired and given the offense a little bit more space before, we were going a little bit more helter-skelter and pushing it. Now, by playing a little bit more deliberate and giving those guys a chance to get their breath back, it allows those guys to step out and play the ball a little bit harder. You know, so now we go out and play the ball, we're not getting beat, you know, because we're giving the Dodger a yard or two of space inside the box. We're continuing to be able to glue to those guys, which is making it so much easier on our slide guys and making it so much easier on our off ball guys to be able to make decisions. And it's essentially the same scheme defensively. It's just you're doing it with players that aren't tired. You know, and we looked at that Richmond game and really the Duke game the first time, and we said, holy cow, they played 41 minutes, Duke did, of offense the first time we played them. How can any defense be good when you're giving a team that's that good that many chances? We looked at the Richmond game, and we watched the first two quarters of the Richmond game with our guys in the locker room, which is always like painstaking to do after a loss. But we did that. And at the end of the film, I said, what was the all tell, you know, what was the answer coming out of that game in your guys' opinion? Asking the guys in the locker room, they said, man, the whole film was defense. And I said, yeah. I'm like, how are we ever going to be the best version of ourselves if the defense is tired and the offense is fresh and the offense doesn't see the ball, you know, and the offense doesn't take care of the ball? So our defense's growth, I think, has had a lot to do with the fact that our offensive guys have made better decisions with the ball and that we've been able to, you know, tilt the field back to even rather than being able to, you know, force our defense to play 65%, 70% of the game.
Let's turn our attention to your task this week. A team you know very well, you've played them each of the last few years, and you've played them earlier in the season, the Duke Blue Devils. We talked a little bit about how you guys made some changes internally that's helped you find your way and become your best version of your team. How do you slow them down, and what do you expect to see on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we know Duke incredibly well. Man, they're good everywhere. I don't know, outside of Duke and Carolina this year, and really, I guess Maryland you could put in there too. I don't know if we've ever seen a team that's as balanced as those three, just in terms of their face-off, their goalie, their offense, their defense, just everything about those teams with the fifth-year seniors. Man, they're all-star squads. You know, so I don't know if you're going to slow them down per se, but again, we're going to try our best to just, you know, keep playing the way we've been playing against a team that's very, very, very good. And, you know, hopefully if we can do that, we can close the gap a little bit from where we were last time, which is obviously, you know, definitely a one-sided affair. And, you know, I think going over there the first time and playing those guys, we learned a lot about ourselves and we learned a lot about their team. And they're just, I mean, from top to bottom, they're fantastic. And I've said this every year. I think that's one of the best coaching staffs in the country between, you know, Coach Sanowski, Matt, Ronnie Caputo, you know, they're just karate. They're fantastic. And I think there are, you know, of all the teams that we play, they're probably the most opportunistic team. I mean, they can score any which way and they take advantage of every little, you know, negative play you have.
You mentioned you've done exams and things are kind of on the downside in terms of just being able to play lacrosse. And this time of year, college campuses are a little bit more muted. But to get to the NCAA tournament, to win your first SoCon championship since 2015, what's the reaction been like around campus this week? And what does that mean overall for High Point lacrosse?
It's been awesome. I mean, all the coaches in our department have reached out. Our athletic director, our university president, brought our guys up on stage at graduation on Saturday and just talked about it for like a minute or two and held the plaque up. I mean, they love lacrosse down here. And I think, you know, we first got down here 10 years ago, not too many people called it like lacrosse, I think is what they refer to it as. Big L, little A, big C. I think a lot of it was being spelled down here, space between the A and the C. But they've grown to love it. You know, and I think both the men's and the women's team here at High Point have been, you know, a great front porch to the university. It's gotten us into some schools in the Northeast that I don't think really a lot of kids were coming to High Point or knew about High Point before it. And so the reception was fantastic and it just felt great. I mean, I don't know how other way to say it. I mean, to beat a great opponent like Jacksonville and to beat a great opponent like Richmond in such a short amount of time and to, you know, have a little bit more time between. I mean, last time we made the NCAA tournament, it was find out who you play on Sunday. And then we were playing Towson on Wednesday. I mean, it was crazy, you know, to have a week is like, just is such a blessing and such a gift. And it almost gives you an opportunity early part of the week to just kind of, you know, take that deep breath in and reflect on the weekend and then be like, all right, everything's behind us now. Let's move forward.
Don't be too rough on the people down south, Coach. Before D-Fly came to Johns Hopkins, he's from Delaware. He thought it was Lacrosse E. So that's how he would pronounce it.
They play it everywhere now.
We still get some strange looks from people in the neighborhood, but they're starting to come around.
Coach, thank you for joining us again. One final question we've asked every coach this, and we want to get your opinion on it. Road trips, obviously very different in 2021. What is the place, the restaurant or the team meal spot that you have missed the most or will miss the most in this COVID year? And what that you can't wait to get back to on in 2022?
Wow, man. What a question. I know the team loves Maggiano's. I mean, those guys, every time we go on the road, Coach, we go to Maggiano's. Coach, we go to Maggiano's. For me, I really like any place in Little Italy in Baltimore. I'm a fan of. So I hope at some point we can open up the dining establishments again. As people can see on the sidelines, I definitely like food, and I think our guys do too. So we got to get back to those days.
That's right. So, Dan, you know, Coach Torpy's a Baltimore guy. He's a Calvert Hall guy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I should have known.
He's been so well-traveled. You know, it happens a lot of times when a person goes away to school and then coaches in different areas, you forget where they came from. But Coach Torpy's a where did you grow up, John?
I grew up in Timonium.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Yep. Was born and raised in Pedonia Village Apartments, so we moved on up to Mays Chapel, man.
There it is.
There today. So
good stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us, Coach. And best of luck to you and the Panthers Sunday night against Duke.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate having me.
I always love to hear coaches talk about the bond they have with their team and how grateful they are when they get to spend that extra time during the postseason. And it's really cool that they have, you know, they played their championship game last Friday, so they have graduation, special ceremony for the players, and then you get until Sunday night before they have to play again. And it's a special time in High Point.
It really is. Congratulations to John Torpy and his Panthers. They did win the SoCon in 2015, but they had to play a play-in game. They lost to Towson. I believe it was 2 goals. I think it was 9-7, 10-8, something like that. So although they've been to the tournament, like John said, they have a whole week to prepare. They have a whole week to kind of soak this in. They have a full week to get together, you know, to have the real as the experience can be under COVID conditions. I love it when I hear coaches come on and say they're willing to make adjustments and they're willing to recognize how they have to tweak the way they play based on, you know, what the offense is doing, what the defense is doing or whatever. That's a sign of a great coach and a great staff. So many times you feel like coaches are afraid to make adjustments. You know, they want to ride or die with their guys. Like, these are our guys. And this is the way we play. Yada, yada, yada. So kudos to the Panthers. Tall order. Last time they got together with Duke, 27-8? The Blue Devils won that game.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be much different this time around. I do think Duke wins this game, but it's going to be a much different game than it was the first time around.
Yeah, you mentioned that they're kind of changing away the style that they play and how that could help them, especially in a game like this, where they can balance out their offensive and defensive possession times a little bit and give them a better chance. So we shall see, Dix. We shall see. And the final game of the weekend, one I think up there with Lehigh, Rutgers, and Georgetown, Syracuse, is maybe the most anticipated game of the weekend. Number 7 seeded Denver, 12-4 in the regular season, will host the Loyola Greyhounds, who are 9-5. The game's at 7:30.
Yeah, let's rewind to our earlier conversation. I was a little surprised Denver was seeded so high at 7. You know, the win over Georgetown was their shining star, if you will. But a loaded lineup. I guess they could have been unseated and still gone to Denver, you know, or played it on their home field. This is an intriguing matchup. I think the last time these two teams met, if memory serves me right, was 2012, Navy Marine Corps Stadium, where Loyola beat Denver. Mark Matthews, though, for the Pioneers, was just like, it was unbelievable that game. Had a lot of highlight reel goals. This time around, you've got the two-headed monster of Stathakis and Erlin at the face-off dot versus Bailey Savio of Loyola. Ryan McNulty, the long stick midi for the Greyhounds, is going to be a player in this game, you know, a difference maker in this game. You know, how does Loyola match up with the offense of Denver is a question. You know, Denver's not a team that, you know, does a lot of dodging individually. It's more off ball and crisp movement, keeping it hot. I'm with you, man. This is, you know, Lehigh, Rutgers, Notre Dame, Drexel, Loyola, Denver. They're the three, with Loyola, Denver being the one I'm most interested in watching.
As I mentioned, it's the NCAA tournament. Make sure you have your plan set. Know what you're going to eat. Know where you're going to watch, what you're going to drink. Set up your whole day, both Saturday and Sunday, around these games if you can. Make sure you make up for lost time. Last year's tournament, just remember, we didn't even get it last year, so you got to make up for last time.
Well said. Look at you.
Dix, it's time for the give and go. And speaking of making up for lost time, I'm sitting in my office, and I'm over by the mall in Columbia, and it actually looks out at Merriweather Post Pavilion. That is what looking at. When I look out my window, I see Merriweather Post Pavilion. And we haven't talked about music in a while. And
right.
I
wanted to
talk about music.
Do your windows open?
They don't.
So no. I was wondering if, like, there's a show at Merriweather, if you could, you know, just pull the low rent move and just go to your office and listen to the show.
Unfortunately, you can't do that. But I imagine maybe get up on the rooftop or I don't know. I have to feel that I haven't had to do that because, you know, when I started working here, there was a pandemic and everything.
Yeah, and there's been no shows. I still have. Oh, by the way, they're right here. I still have the Hall & Oates tickets.
Nice.
It's supposed to be you and your wife, me and my wife, and my buddy Craig Ronald and his wife.
Oh, Ronald. Yeah, that would be fun.
So it has been rescheduled for 2021. So I have to. I think I'll let you know the date. I'm still waiting for the money, but with these tables, we'll tackle that later.
Waiting for it to happen. It's going to be Saturday.
So you're not going to pay. You're one of those.
Saturday, the event has September to happen 18th. For me. To- No, you'll get your money. I just, you know, yeah. it's Saturday, September 18th, 7 o'clock.
Is that what it is?
Rescheduled from August 22nd, 2020. Yeah. So I want to do this today. We haven't talked about music in a while. So I want to talk about music. I want to talk about some of the concerts that are coming around Baltimore, DC area. And then I want to get your thoughts on some of, like, the best shows you've seen at Merriweather. You know, You grew up in Catonsville, not too far away. Merriweather Post Pavilion, for those of you who aren't, you know, in the region listening to us, is a major concert facility that regional amphitheater that can host, I don't know, I think, 15,000 people in there on the lawn for a good show.
Yeah, I'm not good at counting people.
Yeah,
but that sounds about right.
But all the major acts have come through here that would play those type of facilities over the years. I mean, I've seen the Allman Brothers, Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, the Grateful Dead, you know, the big acts that have come through. Mm-hmm. But the one that I think the first event of the season at Merriweather is the M3 Rock Festival. And it'll be, I think they're allowed to start opening up Merriweather the first weekend in July. So this is Friday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 4th. Kix, I'm just going to throw out some of the names of these bands. Kix, Tesla, Rat, Night Ranger. Hey, what a lineup, right?
Wow. Slaughter.
What a lineup of hair bands. What do these guys look like now? I'm sure the music's the same, but what about the crowd? Oh my God, the people watching at that thing. There'll be so much denim.
Oh man. So when I was growing up, the guys that, so I was, you know, when I grew up in Catonsville, as you mentioned, it was, so I was born in 72. So, you know, this is like late, you know, early 80s, mid 80s. There were a group of older guys and we called them the Grits. And there were the guys that had the Judas Priest, Iron Maiden shirts. They drove the Trans Ams. They had the big comb sitting out of their back of their gray corduroy pants. And they love the heavy metal. I love heavy metal. But name one song. Can you name one song from each of the bands that you just mentioned? I can.
Probably. Oh, there's a couple other ones that are playing. The Iron Maidens are playing at this, as well as Queensryche.
I remember Queensryche. Oh, my God.
And Winger. Winger.
Are Beavis and Butthead going to be there?
And Warrant, Lita Ford, Great White, L.A. Guns, Faster Pussycat.
Damn, how long is this show? Is this show like 8 days?
It's 3 days. It's 3 days. You can get a 3-day pass for as low as $80. What? I gotta get one of these.
So Kix is from Maryland.
Yeah, they're
I think they're from Frederick.
They are. I've seen them many times. I've seen them as recently as like 2 summers ago at Dewey Beach.
Wow. I think my favorite Kix song is Cold Blood. I love that song, Cold Blood.
I love Kix. I really do. See the way
Kix are for kids.
I like know exactly what songs they're going to play and in the order. The set list doesn't change.
We know what Rat looks like, or at least Steven Piercy, because they're in a Geico commercial where they say, right, the homeowners say, we have a rat problem. Yeah. And the Round and Round. So we know what Steven Piercy looks like.
He's held up pretty good, considering. Yeah. All things considered. So here are some of the big acts that are coming that you would care about around here. Guns N' Roses owes people a show, and they're playing this summer. The Black Crows are playing at Jiffy Lube Live down at Bristol, formerly Nissan Pavilion.
Well, see, that's what's put a hurting on Merriweather is Jiffy Lube Live, because a lot of the bigger bands that used to come to Merriweather now bypass Merriweather and go to Jiffy Lube Live. Case in point, we saw Def Leppard at Merriweather a few years ago, and Def Leppard doesn't come to Jiffy or Merriweather anymore. They just go to Jiffy Lube.
Yeah, they're, Def Leppard is touring with Motley Crue and Poison.
Wait a minute. I thought Motley Crue had a retirement concert, a farewell concert, and everything.
I think they're having it. Playing some more.
Oh, that sucks, man. Vince Neil's voice is trash these days. I love Motley Crue, but his voice is torched. And so when we did see Def Leppard a few years ago at Merriweather, it was Lita Ford, Poison, and Def Leppard was the main event. Could take or leave Lita Ford. I think we may have caught one of her songs.
Yeah.
Poison we were there for. And I like Poison.
I like Poison. Poison's good.
They sucked live.
Oh,
they
really?
They were not good. No. And Def Leppard was amazing. Amazing,
surprisingly good, the show that Def Leppard puts on.
Oh, why you say surprisingly good? You're such a snob.
No. I've seen them a couple of times. They're fantastic. Okay. They played a few acoustic songs, which I would never think.
I didn't dig the acoustic.
Did like it?
Did you? I didn't dig it. I didn't dig them.
They, you know, who's the guitar player who like won't put a shirt on?
Phil Collin.
Still, I mean, that guy.
Dude's ripped.
It's ripped. I thought the vocals were good. I thought it was a great show. I really
It was fantastic.
I saw that show several years ago. Cheap Trick was the opening act.
Oh God.
And then Poison played. And I thought they were pretty good.
Okay.
And then Def Leppard played. And that was a really good show. Cool. Oh, when they played Pour Some Sugar on Me, it was an outdoor place. And it just started drizzling, like raining a little bit. Oh, it was amazing.
We have a friend who is the official masseuse of Merriweather. And
that's a thing.
Yeah, it is. And so she, when we were going to the Def Leppard show, Erica got a hold of her and said, hey, we're coming to the show. She always like, you know, let me know if you're coming to the show. I might be able to get you backstage or, you know, down stage front, you know. So this was one of the shows that they could get us stage front. So Erica, it was like us and maybe three or four other couples. all the ladies go down stage front, and they didn't come back for a while. So I was like, yeah, my wife might be on the tour, but, you know, might be on Def Leppard's bus by now. I don't know. So like we went down for, you know, a few minutes and then came right back. It was, what I remember is it was super duper loud, man. Like I couldn't. And I, so you may not know this, but I worked the summer security at Meriwether, 92, the summer of 92, after my sophomore year at Hopkins. I missed Lynyrd Skynyrd. That was the first show of the season, but that happened Memorial Day weekend when we were in the Final Four up at Philadelphia. So my very first show at Meriwether was Jimmy Buffett. And that place was mobbed. And then as the summer went on, you know, Steve Miller was there, John Cougar was there, MC Hammer was there. I guarded Reba McEntire's dressing room. She gave me a Snapple. That was really nice. She's a very nice lady. Elton John played there later that summer. He was fantastic.
I think I went to that show.
Elton John.
I saw Elton John about that time. Yeah, he's good.
And
I might make it.
I mean, I've seen the Allman Brothers there at least half a dozen times. I worked that show. I had stage front for that show. So that was really cool.
Were you in front of the piano, like the organ?
I was in the
Hammond
middle.
B3?
I was there for sound check. Okay. And it was Dickie Betts and Greg Allman, like off the stage, like in front of the stage, like talking about lighting and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And like, I'm such a rule follower. Like, I just wanted to introduce myself so bad. And the same with Reba McEntire, but like, you just, you know, they tell you like, you know, you're here to work. You're not here to, you know, blah, blah, no pictures and blah, 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 blah. John Cougar is not a nice person. He was really, or John Mellencamp, I should say, yeah. He was a taskmaster. Steve Miller is not a good guy, but you know, they're working and they want things to be a certain way, and,
sure.
But it's the way that they go about it. MC Hammer's awesome, man. He was on the downside of his career and it was raining. And there was hardly anybody in the pavilion. Everybody was on the lawn. He just told everybody to come into the pavilion. He's like, come on in. You paid your money. Come on in. Keep dry. Listen to the music. And he put on a great show. My wife and I took our kids to see Fall Out Boy a few years ago. So Matt was maybe 13. So that means Owen was like 10. They each brought a friend. And we were on the lawn. And their opening act was Wiz Khalifa. So it was Wiz Khalifa and Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy played a kick-ass show, by the way. But, man, it was just weed central. And Owen's just like, what's that smell? What is that smell? And he's like, oh, it's disgusting. We're like, oh, I don't know. I mean, we're just – and their kids are just – I mean, you know, kids are just hammered. So I took Owen and his buddy to the snack bar to get, like, something to drink. They're carrying a girl out on a stretcher. What's wrong with her? Right. I'm like, oh, I think she probably ate. She got food poisoning.
So, I want to go back.
Mom, we saw some girl. She had to go to the hospital. She had food poisoning.
You had the wine flu.
Yeah.
I want to go back.
Mai Tai flu.
I want to go back to talking about Jimmy Buffett. I remember going to Meriwether probably in the mid to late 90s. For summer concerts when Jimmy Buffett would come, and the progression of how it changed each year. I remember the first year I didn't even have a ticket, but my friend was like, hey, my boss from work is having like a Jimmy Buffett tailgate party or something. It's at Meriwether. So we drove down. You could just drive in and park, or we parked at the mall and walked over and found where they were in the parking lot. And he had brought in truckloads of sand and a sailboat on a trailer, a huge sailboat, tiki huts. This guy had, you know, like a catered party there in the parking lot. I mean, it was literally anything goes. You could do anything you want. And then like the next, and that was out of control. It was really fun, but it was out of control. The next year you could kind of do that, except you had to have a ticket. They wouldn't let you into the parking lot to tailgate unless you had a ticket to the show. And then the year after that, they made a rule that you couldn't stand in the parking lot with a beer or a drink. So people rented U-Haul trucks and would roll up the doors, and that they would just sit inside the truck because you're not actually on the ground. And it just progressively got stricter and more strict and more strict and more strict to now you can't even really, there is no tailgating at Merriweather. Now they have developed the land and they put stuff there and it's not the same as it used to be, but it went from anything goes wild, wild west and lots of fun to you just kind of walked in and watched the show.
I know the hard and fast rule when I worked there, again, 1992, a million years ago, no glass. Couldn't bring glass in. You know, it was almost a little bit like TSA. If there was like a liquid or something, you had to take it from people. But people were, you know, you didn't search people. You searched their bags. You gave them the what's what, you know.
This is inside, though.
This is at the gate, like if you're working gate, you know. The biggest thing that I had to do, like stage front, obviously you had to keep people back, you know, but, and people were pretty respectful. You also had to keep the walkways clear, like fire exits. So the biggest hassle I always had would be people who would like come off the lawn, obviously the sidewalk's clear. So they'd hang out like having a cigarette and you had to be like, look, you got to get out of here. You can't stand. Why can't I stand? And you're like, listen, Karen, let's go move on. There was we had a no chase rule, meaning if someone broke through the gate, jumped the fence, if you couldn't grab them within like five steps, you just let them go. Except one show, Bob Weir, who I guess was a guitarist for the Grateful Dead. I'm not a Deadhead. I never have listened to the Dead. Okay. I knew something was amiss the night I'm rolling in there and you can see like people taking baths in the fountains over across the street at the mall. And just like, it was a different crowd, you know, a lot of hippie looking people, crunchy looking people, whatever. But I guess there were like maybe 1,000 people on the property, maybe 1,500, but there were like 3,000 around the fence. Like all these people, they're all jumping the fence because they didn't want to pay. And I just remember after an hour of this stuff, guy who was my boss, guy named Keith, he was a police officer. And he's like, all right, he called like my squad, whatever they called us, you know, squad or whatever group in and said, all right, you guys know all about the no chase rule, right? I'm like, yeah, like doesn't exist tonight. People come, like chase them down, get them out of here. So that was like, I mean, for a young, you know, what was I, 19 years old, you know, in shape, coming off of lacrosse season, being able to rough up some stinky granola bars. Because what you would do is you'd see somebody jump the fence, you'd grab them, be like, hey, man, come on, you know, go buy a ticket or whatever. All right, man, I'm cool, man, I'm cool, let me go. All right, let's just walk out with me. I got to walk you out. All right, I'm cool, man, I'm cool. So what's your name, man? I'm like, oh, Mark, what's your name? Screw you, man. And like, then that guy would run away, you know? And so, like after like a dozen of those, you're just like, come on, you know? So that was a fun night.
Oh man. I can't wait to go out and enjoy live music again. It's always fun to do.
Just
and,
buy your ticket. Buy your ticket.
Yeah. Buy your ticket. I got to buy my tickets from you, obviously.
Yes, that's true. That's
all right. True. It sounds like a good place to stop. We would like to thank our guest this week, High Point head coach John Torpy. Thanks for your time, coach, and best of luck to the Panthers in the NCAA tournament. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review, a 5-star review, please. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. And remember, really close, guys. We're really close. So stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games while you can.